I wish I were Jean-Luc Picard. I don't think it would be that hard to sip Earl Grey and save the day while boldly going through the stars. Or maybe I'd be Captain Mal, a shining six gun as my pal. Sexy, broken, full of jokes, even as things have gone to hell. Oh, I wish I were Starship Captain.
Welcome to a new episode of Geeks Explicitly, the only explicit podcast on the Troll in the Corner Network discussing all aspects of geek life. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt, and here on episode 19, I am delighted to say that once again you get to hear the one, the only, Mr. Brent Newell. Brent, how are you?
Fuck yeah.
Woo!
Doing well, thanks.
For today, we're going to get to talk about something that I love daily, which are some of my and some of your favorite science fiction shows.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to have quite a bunch of interesting ones here and probably a good lively discussion.
I think so. And I'm willing to bet I will suggest a few that folks have not heard of.
Well, I know before we started, we were just kind of, you know, talking and shooting the shit.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned that you have quite a few anime ones on there. So I think that'll be interesting.
Yes. Yeah, oh yeah, I've got 11.
Okay then, I think before we start, I want to get into all 11. 11? Not 10,
just to begin with, 13, you know,
fucking 11?
Sort of the top of the list, you know, top 11.
Okay, the top 11 sci-fi shows according to Mr. Brent Newell. 11? What the hell? I want to just tell all of you guys that the reason why this topic kind of came into my mind was the sad news recently that the actor who portrayed Commander Jeffrey Sinclair on Babylon 5, Mr. Michael O'Hare, had passed away. He was
only 60 years old, too.
I know, heart attack. Can you believe? He's the third that I can think of actor from Babylon 5 who has died. Because the guy, and I can't remember his name, but the actor who played Jakar passed away, and the actor who played the doctor, Michael something or other, passed away.
Oh, did he? I didn't hear that. That's sad.
Because he had, I want to say he had MS, and that's probably wrong, but he had some sort of degenerative illness. And he passed away, a while ago. I think he was in his 40s, maybe.
Wow.
The guy who played Jakar, I think, was in his late 60s, early 70s when he died.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're dropping like flies.
It's a real shame. I mean, Babylon 5 was, as far as I can tell, it was really the show that ushered in the story arc approach to storytelling on American science, on American television, period. You'd had some attempts with things like Twin Peaks, but Babylon 5, I think, was the one that really told people, okay, here's how to tell kind of long-form arc storytelling on television, and, it was groundbreaking.
Well, Babylon 5 is one of my favorite sci-fi shows, and one of the reasons why I like it is what you just mentioned. The person who wrote the show, he actually wrote out every season before they started shooting.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew what he wanted to happen in season one, season two, the entire arc. He knew the whole story before it began. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, there were minor changes here and there, but by and large, he wrote it like you would a book or a movie. So it was all planned out. And most TV shows, even now, a lot of TV shows, they don't do that. They go week by week. And, oh, what did people respond to? Oh, people liked so-and-so's hairstyle. Let's do that. And maybe we'll do an episode on their hair or so-and-so being friends. But he didn't do this. Michael Straczynski, he planned it all out. And he created it all. He knew exactly what he wanted it to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at times, the acting a little cheesy. we gotta be honest. Come on,
you know. And let's not forget the episode in, I think it was season one, where you had the crazy mutant, you know, guy who was running around the station attempting to destroy it because he'd been mutated by some weird alien virus. That was that was a little more, I don't know, Star Trek than, you know, other things. But oh well.
I think another one of the great things it had for it was, of course, it had the fantastic story, had an amazing cast, but then for the time, it had groundbreaking special effects.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and certainly for you know, for television at the time, and the music as well. I mean, the music definitely had that wonderful, strong, for lack of a better word, you know, epic science fiction, you know, big operatic kind of a score to it.
The music from it actually reminds me of music from another of my favorite sci-fi shows, Battlestar Galactica, the reimagined series.
Ah,
right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with Bear McCreary, all the work he did with that, fantastic music. In, like, any great movie, any great whatever, like, the music is what I feel really brings a lot of the emotion out. Mm-hmm. So it did that for B5, and Battlestar Galactica, so much of it is emotion and the depth of the characters and everything, and the music was an integral part of that.
And I have to admit to being a fan of the original Battlestar Galactica. I remember back when that was one of the few sci-fi shows that were on television. And, again, groundbreaking special effects and a more serious approach to science fiction than a lot of shows at the time. Certainly cheesy a lot of the time, but it was just neat seeing a show that brought that level of craft, for lack of a better word, to a science fiction show back when, you know, when you did a science fiction show, it was assumed that all your special effects would look like original Star Trek. and they're like, no, we can make this look like Star Wars. We can actually make this look good, and we can actually tell stories, and we can have a backstory and some kind of a story arc that we're trying to go for. And, you know, it didn't quite hit it a lot of the time, but gotta give them kudos for trying.
Were you upset when they cast Starbuck in the reimagined series as a woman?
No, not really, because, I mean, it's such a different show. It's one of those things where if you're going to do it, I mean, I actually like when a reimagining says, okay, let's just relook at all the assumptions and let's look at how to make something entertaining now. I never want folks doing an adaptation to try to slavishly follow the original. I want them to look at that and say, hey, look, if we're going to adapt it for another medium, let's adapt it in a way that works well for that medium and that does interesting things.
This is kind of off topic, but related to that, I'm not a fan of Shakespeare, which I'm not going to get into here. But when I'm sure you may recall, because it was all over the theaters at the time, but the Baz Luhrmann adaptation of Romeo and Juliet with Leonardo DiCaprio.
Oh, yeah.
And how, like, he modernized it. He really brought it to the current times then and made it accessible to mainstream America.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something you have to do. I mean, you look at, for example, the British version of Sherlock, where they said, okay, let's adapt. And I remember watching an interview with the producer, and they said, why do that? And he said, well, because most things do get modernized. A lot of plays, you look at opera, you look at all these things, and there are often modern interpretations of those that says, okay, this was written 200 years ago. You know, one way of making it fresh and helping us to understand it is to reinterpret it in different ways. And I think that's a valuable thing to do. It doesn't mean that the old one, you know, immediately vanishes from human civilization. It's just a new way of looking at it.
Well, anytime you have something that's really strong and has a lot of value, like Sherlock or like Battlestar Galactica or whatever the case happens to be, it's timeless. So like, yes, Sherlock Holmes was written, you know, a gazillion years ago in a different time period. But when they did all of the radio dramas, which, of course, nowadays, they're so out of date, right? But the radio dramas with Basil Rathbone and now Bruce, they made them and set them in the 40s because that was a time it was with World War II and all the stuff with Nazis. And then, of course, when they did all those famous movies, again, they kind of had some of the original, but then they modernized it. And then, like you mentioned, with the BBC TV series, which I think is fantastic, they did the same thing. And, like, they paid homage to the originals, but they really brought them into the 21st century.
And it's actually a good example of one of the shows I wanted to mention, Ghost in the Shell.
Okay.
Where this was originally a relatively short manga comic book from the, late 80s, that was adapted into a movie originally. And it was this very tense, tight, serious, near future cyberpunk story about this like anti-terrorist unit, basically of people who are all part cyborgs and all the things they have to deal with. And then a couple of years ago, there was a TV series adaptation of that. And there's this question, how do you take that? And they decided we're going to go back. And whereas the original story was partly comedic and partly serious, and it had sort of some episodic elements and some of these, longer form stories that were used for the movie, they said, we're gonna go back and make it, you know, a little more lighthearted. We're gonna go back and use that original view and tell our own stories. We're not even gonna try to retell those plots that were done in the movie. And as a result, you get this sort of cyberpunk police drama. You get kind of Law and Order, you know, in the year 2032 or whenever it is, with this special unit that goes out and deals with terrorism and other problems with society. And it's this amazing, you know, again, serious bit of science fiction that we get 50 episodes of. I mean, that's pretty awesome.
Is that, or maybe I'm thinking of something else, but is that the standalone complex?
That it is, exactly.
Okay. I have a friend who, he's actually the guy who got me into anime, and he loves Ghost in the Shell, and like anytime you mention anime, it's definitely one of the shows he talks about. Mm-hmm. And, like, he could spend his life just watching this TV show.
Well, I think it's one of the things that pulls us and many to science fiction television in general is that mature, sophisticated storytelling. I, much as I love rockets and fighters and blasters and so forth, I really want to sink my teeth into a story a lot of the time. And things like Ghost in the Shell and Battlestar Galactica and the new Doctor Who, for example, can really, give us some things to think about.
Yeah, my wife is really into Torchwood.
Oh, yeah.
She loves, you know, the character development and everything. And, like, I tried watching and it's a little weird for me. But we're actually going to try to watch the new Doctor Who. We have the first season. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen it yet. I've never seen any Doctor Who as much as I love sci-fi. And everyone's like, you need to see Doctor Who. And so we're like, okay, fuck it. We'll do it. And we got it from work. And we just – actually, we've been watching a different sci-fi show that I was going to mention later on that I'm sure is nowhere near as good as the new Doctor Who, though I think it is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to Ghost in the Shell, did you have any other anime that the top 11?
The top 11, yeah, nah. And it gets back to that idea of there's just some, you know, mature stories. My favorite anime series of all time is a show called Serial Experiments Lane, which is set in sort of an alternate, fairly near, well, probably an alternate current about a young girl who finds that, basically, imagine a world in which the internet can sort of cross over into the real world, and in which there's been, you know, Wi-Fi signals and so forth are allowing folks to sort of have hallucinations and have data from the internet sort of appear in front of them because, you know, Wi-Fi and all these signals are passing through our bodies all the time and the protocols have all been screwed up so much that now we're sort of starting to shift into that reality. And now she's starting to see very weird things and she's starting to get emails from dead people. And she has to kind of deal with all of these things about what the heck is going on in the real world. But it deals with questions of, internet relationships and connections with people. And what does the internet mean? And how do we actually deal with people they're around the world and that we kind of have these relationships with, we kind of don't. And there's just a lot there to think about. And it's, you know, like I said, it's mature, sophisticated storytelling. It's a good thing.
I found that one of the TV shows, regardless of genre, that I think has done an amazing job for storytelling depth and really in-depth analysis of what it is to be like who we are as people and what our belief structure is the anime Neon Genesis Evangelion.
Oh, okay.
I know that's really mainstream and I don't want to be like, I'm a hipster. I like stuff before. But I mean,
I don't know.
I think it's an anime like everyone mentions. Like you mm-hmm. don't even know what the word anime means. And people's like, there's something called Eva. Let me talk about that. But it covers so much that, in some ways, it's so broad, but in other ways, if you like watch it again and again and again, I find that you really notice a lot of details, and you can see, especially early on, before the corporation ran out of funding for the you can see all the details and how much attention they paid to everything.
Absolutely, I mean they're kind of nuts,
kind of,
and they kind of always have been, and that's one of the things is that they're. You know, they really, really, really care about these things. And it's one of the wonderful things about them. Have you been watching any of the Rebuild films?
I've seen some, but not many.
Okay. For those wondering who we're talking about, there's this four movie sort of remake that the company is coming out with. They've just done they just released a third over in Japan, they're about to. And I mean, those movies are just absolutely incredible in terms of the level of detail and complexity, and just the amount of stuff they're kind of throwing at the screen at any given time. And it's just, you know, it's really, like you say, it's neat to see something that that really is trying to do a lot of things at once, which you don't get in a lot of, say, sitcoms.
Well, one of the strengths of anime, I find, is that it's kind of built off this foundation of manga. And manga, not here in America, like America-oriented manga is completely different, I find, than manga from, like, Japan, which is so detailed and has so many layers of understanding. Mm-hmm. Like, you need, like, a PhD to kind of understand some of the stuff that goes on in this shit. And the anime builds on that. Yeah. I was also kind of surprised with Ava how important Christianity is in there, considering it was made in a country that does not have a strong Christian background going back, you know, a gazillion years. They come from, like, the Shintoist, Buddhist kind of place. And then here they are. They're basically lecturing all of Christianity on what it is to be a Christian.
Well, they have a very mixed relationship with Christianity. I mean, you know, famously, I think it was 200 years ago, the emperor decided that the Christian, you know, there had been Christian missionaries in Japan for a long time. The emperor said, you know, I don't like that anymore. Crucify them all. And so they just went out and crucified every Christian on the island.
And that's not the first time they've done it. You go back, like, seriously, you go back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. You go back to the Warring States period. What's his name? Tokugawa Ieyasu, the first shogun, which I kind of touched on last episode when I was talking about the films of Kurosawa.
Yeah.
The leaders before him, the emperors before him, they were like, you know, we don't like all these Catholics, all these Jesuits here. Yeah. We want to get rid of you all. Get the fuck out of our country. So, do you know what? We're going to kill you. We will crucify you because we think you're just retarded. We want to get you the fuck out of here. And again, still not the first time they've done it. You're right. There's this whole love-hate kind of thing going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, in Eva specifically, Hideaki Anno, the director, had this kind of interest in Christianity and had done, I don't want to even say research, but he had looked into a lot of the symbology and decided to kind of throw it all into Evangelion. And I mean, the funny thing about it is that I read a book by one of the other people involved in the show, and they said, I hate to say this, but I don't think Anno ever actually read the Bible. I think he read up on three wise men. Cool. All these different concepts. Cool. Throw them in. And we'll kind of mix them all in and put in. But it's one of the things actually that anime does particularly well that, live action, for example, struggles with is that in animation, because everything's drawn, everything looks like it's in the same reality.
Yep.
You know, we have difficulty with a show like, say, Revolution. That's maybe not the best example, but any show which has science fiction elements, we have to look at that and say, okay, what's real, what isn't, and do I believe that that's there, that's not? In animation or comics or things like that, since everything's in the same world, you know, okay, he climbs through a giant robot. They have giant robots. Cool.
Well, exactly. Look at something, and this is another one of my favorites, Futurama, right? Yeah, it's a comedy or whatever, and people probably think of that first, but it's really, it's a sci-fi show.
Sure.
And again, since, like you said, since it's animated, everything all fits into that world. You don't have to worry about some scumbag director coming back to his films later on and adding in all the special effects stuff, fixing blinking or having people shooting first or didn't shoot first or whatever, and then changing things so that they stand out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
It is what it is because it was all done at the same time. Some poor Korean animator working 80 hours a week had to, you know, do the stuff or else they lose the contract and he gets whipped like happened in Clark's animated series. What was it? Episode 4? The anime episode?
That's right.
Everybody work. Whack, whack.
I mean,
it's not a laughing matter, but.
But yeah, but no, it's true. You know, animation just kind of works like that. You can have shows like, Read or Die, which if folks haven't checked this out. Oh, I know. I mean, you know, total control of paper and turning it into a weapon. Well, what's not awesome about that?
She's perhaps the most unlikely superhero.
Absolutely.
Let me kill you with my books. I mean, you're thinking, what the fuck? But it's so engaging and interesting.
Absolutely. And, you know, they have a wonderful sense of action and an adventure and this whole sort of James Bond aesthetic. And then you get into the TV series where you have three girls with these powers.
Yep.
And stories about why they're doing that and so forth and so on. It's one of the things that I think anime in particular has as a strength is that because their writers come out of manga and from white novels and other things like that, they have this ability to tell these longer form stories and to be somewhat more intricate with their stories because you can do that in manga. You know you're going to be either you're going to be there for a while or you're going to die in 2 weeks because that's how ruthless the manga industry is. So you throw all your eggs in one basket and you just, you're awesome as often as possible. And it's something that I think we lose a lot in America where we have these, you know, a lot of these shows that are a lot of fun, but because they're kind of pacing themselves and how to do things, I never saw any of it, but from what I understand, Heroes had this problem where they were kind of trying to pace themselves and figure out how to tell this story, but it just wasn't really an effective, pacing for that kind of a show.
I think you're right. And then some shows just kind of suffer from the, I don't know what I really want to call it. They just keep on prolonging things. They know once I reach a certain point that like the show's going to end.
Yeah.
So you get something like Lost and they keep on prolonging mm-hmm. And this is not a sci-fi show at all, but you look at, what the fuck is it? Gilligan's Island. I mean, yeah. You know, as soon as someone comes and rescues them, they get fucking off the island and the show's over. So clearly something has to happen. And you just get that. And it, in some ways, it almost ruins it because they, in order to appeal to the viewers, they need to prolong how long the show's going to be on.
So this reminds me of this absolutely terrible, terrible, anime work that I'm going to mention here, Rin, Daughters of Memnosign.
Okay.
Which, unfortunately has a lot of people who love the thing, and I don't understand why. It's basically about a couple of girls who are immortal and who have this kind of detective agency, and so you follow them over the course of, I think, 5 episodes. And the problem is it's an action show, and they're immortal. So anytime someone shows up and tries to kill them, they're immortal.
It's like, why bother?
Right, and there's this one character who shows up and is trying to kill the main character, and, like, shows up in every single episode, throws buildings on them, and keeps saying, ha-ha, I've killed you now. She's immortal. And this happens over and over and over again. It's kind of like, okay, people, I'm sorry, that just doesn't work as a concept, unless you're going to, do something interesting with it. Like, as folks have realized with characters like Superman, you know, you make it about keeping Superman from getting to somewhere in time. That's how to make that interesting. But just, you know,
I have a few like honorable mentions, and one of them, which I've been watching lately, could easily suffer from the disease you're describing. Mm. And it's the Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Because like, if you look at that as an action show, which it is, but if you look at it as an action show and you're like, well, we know that Terminator 1 and Terminator 2 are going to fight, but they're fucking Terminators, right? So what are they going to do? They're just going to beat the shit out of each other, take the bullets out, and then they're going to fucking heal, right? And well, that's the end of the episode. But with a show like that, you have to, I think they do it really well, but you have to look at it for what it adds to the whole universe that mm-hmm. exists in, and also what it deals with their interpersonal relationships and the character development. Yep. And stuff like that. So if a show doesn't have that, it falls on its face, which makes it dangerous. But then if you go the other way, you go to a show like, and I feel like every episode I find a way to mention, to mention the work of this guy, but, Firefly, these characters, right? They are not indestructible. They are as flawed and as human as they can be. Mm-hmm. And everyone from the ship on down gets the shit beat out of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you know, they keep on trying to rise above and struggle against, and so it has all that other stuff we've talked about, the special effects and the storyline mm-hmm. and the music, and has all this shit. But then mm-hmm. it also has this really beautiful vulnerability with it.
Yeah.
Where the characters, like, you know, they want to do what they can, and they try to be good, but they're complicated, and then they still get the shit beat out of them.
Well, and I think it's important in a show like that, and another, you know, great example is Cowboy Bebop.
Yep.
It's always tempting in these shows to make your characters a lovable losers all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that becomes a, you know, a cliche where, okay, whatever happens, something's going to happen, so they're not going to get their money. And something that the shows like Firefly and Bebop handle well. No, sometimes they manage. Sometimes it works out. Sometimes they get the money, but they're always kind of scraping by, and there's always something complicating it. I think that's something that, you know, Firefly did very well. And on that topic, I'm going to say something that's probably very unpopular. I'm actually in some ways glad.
No, you're not.
Yes.
You're not going to say this.
Yes, I am.
Oh.
I'm in many ways somewhat glad that Firefly only got one season, and I'll explain why.
I wish I had a button I could press that would just, like, bleep you out, and that I didn't have to do it in post-production, because then I could just be like, fucking bleep this, Brent.
Send all emails to Brent at... and here's why. And here's why. I mean, Firefly is an amazing show.
Uh-huh.
But as we all know, you know, as any show goes on, you know, you get filler episodes, you get things that don't work out so well. Firefly had one perfect season. We're never going to get anything other than a completely fat-free, wonderful story. You know, we know from Joss where he was going with that. We can imagine that and envision it. And, you know, we get this little jewel of perfection. And then we get, you know, Serenity after that. And it would be great to get more in that universe. But we complain so often about shows that go on for too long. That's one of those shows where, it ended too soon. No question. More material would be wonderful. But at least we got, you know, that much that was absolutely amazing. Which, you know, it's rare to get a sci-fi show that is at that level of quality.
I think you have a point in that people need to know when it's time to retire.
Yeah.
But I think in the case of Firefly, that time did not come.
It certainly had not yet.
You're right, though. Like, Serenity, although we had to wait fucking forever for mm-hmm. that. But when Serenity came out, it added so much. Mm-hmm. And for me, although not in duration, like running time, but it was worth like another season or two of Firefly. And then if for those like myself who choose to branch out and you read the graphic novels, like you learn, there's one graphic novel, you learn so much about Book and he's just fucking amazing. And you get all these backstories and how it fills in here and there, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so you can learn more about the universe and the characters and stuff. Mm-hmm. So these other things, or if you watch like Castle and you see them do a little homage or whatever, you know, you can get all of that in there, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Or you get some shows, like you said, that just fucking go on forever and they never shut the hell up.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say something else that's probably going to piss people off. Joss Whedon is amazing, but he is known for doing shows that kind of go on for a long time. And where, yes, there's plot going on, but that kind of, go on for a bit long. So I think it's one of those things where, again, and I think, you know, having that in Dollhouse, I think taught Joss a good lesson that, you know, there is, you can make a show for less than seven seasons, you know? And I think that's a good lesson to learn.
I'm glad you mentioned Dollhouse because a lot of people shit on it. But I think Dollhouse is a really good show. I think one that we're lucky that the network was like, do you know what? We know if we don't do this, we're just going to fucking hear from all your fanboys that they gave Dollhouse a second season because that really brought things to a conclusion and told you what was going to happen. So it was really cool in that way. But Dollhouse did so much. It kind of took like the whole Alias thing and melded it with all this other sort of shit. And it put the Whedon stamp on it. And it, I don't know. I thought it was very well done.
Fair enough. And I have not seen any Dollhouse, to, you know, to be fair.
Highly recommend. You know,
there's little clips here and there. Yeah, I hear that. So much stuff to watch.
I think I'm going to close things up with a show that also gets shit on quite a bit by people. For some reason, it's controversial, and I don't really understand why. I've heard some of the debates from people, and I think you're just a fucking loser. But the show is Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And people shit on it because they're like, it's on a fucking space station. It's not on a ship. What are they doing?
So what?
They shit on it because there's a war in it. Apparently, you're not supposed to have war in Star Trek. They shit on it because they don't go and explore as much. They shit on it because of all the religion in it. Well, do you know what? Fuck that.
Mm-hmm. Deep Space Nine was absolutely brilliant in many, many ways. That was a show that, you know, managed to say, okay, we're going to do something completely different with an established franchise, and we're going to do it in a way that's hard. You know, that is a premise that, you know, we're kind of going in a different direction. But I think it's one of those things where, again, you know, you understand the medium. Setting it on a spaceship means you aren't having to come up with a completely new planet to come to every single frickin' episode. There are many things you can do to structure that well. And, you know, I think it was an amazing show that managed to bring together a lot of different elements and a very interesting cast of characters.
I think a difficulty, and I think they were very brave in doing this, but that basing a thing like any show on a limited location, like a space station, mm-hmm. in theory really limits your storylines and your abilities to do stuff. So I think by placing the space station near a wormhole, placing it near a planet, mm-hmm. and having this incredible cast of characters who are coming and going and having these other experiences, mm-hmm. really opened it up. And right. then, of course, you know, they did the whole typical Star Trek time travel, alternate universe kind of thing. So, like, mm-hmm. they got that, but it was so different. It was cool and edgy mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. interesting. And I felt like it was a little, I don't know, grittier.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, and any franchise needs to not change in the sense of reinventing itself, but it needs to try new things. You can't do a ship exploring every single show. And in fact, the franchise I would mention here is Gundam over in the anime world, mm-hmm. where every show changes things up a little bit. And I think that's a smart idea to say, we can still espouse those same values. We can still understand what the core of this is and the kinds of stuff that, say, Gene Roddenberry was very strong about. And it doesn't always have to be the exact same or an extremely similar form every single time.
I think you raise a valid point. And clearly we know what happens when any franchise or one particular franchise decides, well, you know what? Let's just go back to having a ship keep on exploring for two different shows. And, oh, wait, look, and then it died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And it's why you try things. I mean, I appreciated the fact that Enterprise says, no, we're going to go back and we're going to sort of reboot. You know, we're going to try something different. Did it work out? Yeah, not so well. But, okay, you try things and you find out, you know, you're not going to get an amazing high-level series every single time. So why try to replicate that success? Why not try something different? At least get a different sort and learn different lessons each time.
Absolutely. Well, Brent, I want to thank you for discussing all of our favorite sci-fi shows this time.
But I still have like 7 more anime series that I haven't gotten to.
We're a 20-minute show. We're already double the length of a normal episode.
Aw.
So I want to thank you again, and I want to tell everyone that we're going to have, of course, links to everything and lists and stuff in our show notes. You want to head on over to trollitc.com/GE19. That's GE19. And I also want to let all of you know that I am joining Ben Gerber, the owner of Troll ITC, in raising money for a children's hospital to help kids who need medical help who may or may not be able to afford it. So I'm going to be participating in a 24-hour game-a-thon at Ben's house. You can read more about it and donate, and I hope you will, by heading on over to trollitc.com/GEGaming, GEGAMING, and you'll be able to get a link to the charity, and you can make donations online and everything. Ben and I will be playing games nonstop for 24 hours and see what happens and how long it takes for us to get sick of each other. So
it's a great charity, definitely worth worth a donation.
It's amazing. I was telling some people about this and they're like, wait, you're gonna play games for 24 hours and then a charity's gonna get money? And I was like, I know, how amazing is this? Thank you, America, right? So it's a cool thing. I'm really happy to be able to join Ben with this, and I know he's already raised his goal. He's still seeking donations, so you can give to him, or I'm just starting out, so I'm hoping to raise $100 So anyone cool. who's able to give, I would be very appreciative. All the proceeds are going, all the profits are going to Boston's Children's Hospital to help out kids in need. So I just want to thank everyone.
You bet.
And at this point, of course, as always, we're going to queue up our credits and all the information about all of the other shows on the Troll in the Corner podcast network, such as a show that Mr. Brent Newell does over here.
Why, that's right.
Brent, do you want to do a little teaser about it?
Sure. So my little show is called Monsters of the Shattered World. It's a fictional audio drama set in the Dungeons and Dragons world where a scholar is exploring the monsters of his world. And I mean monsters in many senses. Just released episode 4, which is the next to the last episode of this season. So the plot is beginning to really heat up for the big revelations in the last episode. And that is called Monsters of the Shattered World over at trollitc.com/monsters.
I want to suggest that everyone go and listen and download and tell your friends, because the more of you that do it, the more likely Brent is to continue the show, and it's pretty amazing. And exactly. I say we don't let him get off the hook, because he has put a lot of time and effort into this thing.
Well, if you do, I can say this much. I am taking the J. Michael Straczynski approach to Monsters of the Shattered World.
Ooh, interesting.
Uh-huh.
Thank you again, Brent, and I want to thank everyone for listening to Geeks Explicitly. Of course, we will be back again next week and every week, bringing you more hilarious and controversial goodness. But I promise next time, we're going to try to not insult Firefly.
No, I'm not going
to say. And I want to just make a note here that this is an episode we talked about sci-fi, and I didn't once mention Star Wars.
True. That's darned impressive.
So I just want to put that out there, because I could have mentioned the Christmas TV special, which everyone says is worth a load of crap, but I think it's still pretty amazing. And of course, I'm not going to mention Clone Wars, because that's a piece of shit. So thank you all again, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Cool. Here at Geeks Explicitly, we love feedback. You can email us at geeksexplicitly@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Please check us out online by going to www.trollitc.com/geekspodcast. This show is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. If you enjoy this show, you might like some of the other podcasts on the network. Every Wednesday is a new episode of Indie Talks with Troll ITC owner Ben Gerber. Ben chats with people involved with indie games, movies, and much more. Every Thursday is a new episode of Geeks Explicitly, hosted by yours truly. All aspects of geek life are discussed. Wargaming Recon comes to you on the second and fourth Mondays of the month. I chat about historical and New England gaming. Monsters of the Shattered World, hosted by Troll ITC editor Brent Newhall, releases monthly. This story podcast details the adventures of a young scholar encountering strange monsters on a foreign planet. To learn more about the shows on TCPN, visit www.trollitc.com/TCPN. What is Wargaming Recon?
December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan.
3,000 miles from home, an American army is fighting for you.
We today have concluded an agreement to end the war and bring peace with honor in Vietnam.
The world will note that the first atomic bomb was dropped on Hiroshima, a military base.
Historical Wargaming for your ears, only at wargamingforums.com.
Oh, the humanity.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.